Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. This week we have a special episode. Alex Newman is going to join me, and we're going to talk about what the United Nations is doing to help implement the Great Reset. Things as diverse as how they're trying to get our children into the new age through the school system, some of the things they're propagandizing them with, but also, of course, the Agenda 21 and the Agenda 2030 through the climate change agenda, and how that's kind of the blueprint from behind the scenes to completely transform the world into a totalitarian state. But we're going to talk about some of that, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. First, I wanted to mention Naomi Wolf's book. You can see on the screen right there a picture of it. We'll have the link below. We forgot to put that last week. We talked about it. It's very powerful because it just exposes what Pfizer knew before the vaccines rolled out about how deadly they were. So I encourage you to get a copy of that and share it with others. It'll wake them up. Also, one of the things we asked you on the survey a couple weeks ago was about the amount of support you wanted to give. And we had an overwhelming percent of you say, yes, we'd be happy to contribute a couple more dollars a month or whatever to support what you're doing, which is so wonderful. So we finally were able to work that out. And here's how you do it. If you see on the screen there, when you first come to Agenda Weekly, you go up to the top there and hit dashboard. And then once that screen opens up, you see right in the middle, your subscription. Just click on that. Then the next screen, it says, edit your subscription right there in the middle. Hit that. And then over there on the right, you see it says change plan. Just click on that. And then it opens up, select a new plan menu. You open up that little window and it shows the different options available. We've got a variety of different monthly options, just like even $7, $9, and it goes up. And then we have different yearly options. Some of you like to just pay the whole thing up front each year, which is wonderful. But tap on the amount you want to support. And then once you do that, you just hit select plan, and it tells you how to do that. Any amount extra, even a dollar or two, it makes a huge difference to us. A lot of people go, oh, it's $2. It just makes a big difference in what we're trying to do. So any of you that would like to do that, please consider going and just adjusting your plan to whatever amount you'd like to support us in. And those that are at the $5 amount, if that's the level you can do, that is wonderful. We are just putting those other options on there because so many of you asked to do that, which we appreciated greatly. But anyway, I hope you enjoy this interview with Alex. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much, Curtis.
Today, I want to talk with you, and I want us to discuss the United Nations. Everyone knows about the United Nations, but I think a lot of people don't realize how significant it still is and what's going on. We talk about the World Economic Forum a lot because that's kind of in the forefront now. But I know the United Nations is still playing a key role in setting the stage for the Great Reset and everything. So that's what I'd like to talk to you about today and kind of laying the foundation, because a lot of people, they know of the United Nations, but they don't know that much about the United Nations. And they've maybe heard of UNESCO, but they're like, I'm not sure exactly what that is. But would you just start by talking about UNESCO, a little bit of its history, just a little bit back from Huxley, with the things he was talking about, making the unthinkable thinkable and things. What was he talking about? What do you think the real agenda has always been of UNESCO?
Well, it's pretty interesting that they, very early on in UNESCO's history, and to define our terms, UNESCO is the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. So it's kind of like the Department of Education with the Department of Culture, with the Department of Science, all rolled up into one giant abomination. And early on in its history, back in the 1940s, the first head of it, Julian Huxley, was remarkably more honest and transparent about what the real objectives were than they are today. Now, you can still find the real objectives if you spend some time going through their website, if you listen to what their leaders say, if you look at who their leaders are, you examine the reports they put out, you can still discern what they're doing. But early on in its history, they made this argument, and they still use it every once in a while, that because war begins in the minds of men, then peace must also be built into the minds of men. And the thinking was that they were going to use education, or what they claim is education, to try to build in us the right mindset, the right mentality, so that we wouldn't go to war. Now, war has always been the boogeyman that they use as the pretext for global government. If there are no nations, if there are no religions, then, you know, we're all just one, then there's no reason for us to go to war. And in fact, if we all surrender our armed forces to the UN, we can't go to war, right? Which has been the goal all along. So they market this as kind of a peace initiative, but baked into that little tagline is something really significant. They're talking about influencing the minds, the mindset, and the beliefs of especially children, but also adults. Now, there's some interesting fun facts about Julian Huxley that I think are important to understanding the broader context. Julian Huxley was the head of the Humanist Association. And, you know, for a Christian, this should be really a major red flag. Humanism, even though its proponents kind of thought they were inventing a new religion, and they did describe it as a religion back then, when they came up with the Humanist Manifesto, John Dewey and a lot of his cohorts, they framed it as a religion. They said, you know, the first tenet of the religion was religious humanists believe the universe is self-existing and not created. In other words, the nonsense in Genesis 1:1 about in the beginning God created is totally silly, and we reject that. And of course, even if you're not a Christian, and I think you should be, there are really significant political implications to that, because if you believe, as our founders did, that God created us and gave us rights, then people who believe that there is no God, therefore you have no God-given rights, are a major threat to your liberty. So you have all that. And Julian Huxley, again, a major humanist, in fact, a leader of the humanist movement. And I like to tell people, too, you know, even though these people think they invented a new religion, it's actually not a new religion. It's literally the oldest lie in the book. You just go back to Genesis chapter 3 and you see Satan, right? The serpent tells Eve, "Oh, ye shall be as gods," right? You get to determine good and evil for yourself. That is basically the humanist religious belief, if you will. Mixed in with some communism, you know, they went on to say that we got to get rid of the profit motive. We've got to have equitable distribution of the means of life. So, you know, mixed in with a little communism for good measure. And he was also, and this is going to drive the progressives crazy. They hate it when I talk about this, but it's a well-documented fact. He was also the leader of the Eugenics Society. Now, the eugenics were, you know, and you could see how eugenics would flow naturally from the humanist religion. They believed that evolution is basically the foundation of life on this planet. And they believed that some races were better than other races, and some genes were better than other genes. And that if we could just scientifically breed humans to be kind of like cattle, right? We'll get the best traits and we'll get rid of the ones that we don't like. Then we'll have this kind of wonderful utopia. So that's Julian Huxley for you in a nutshell. He was a humanist, he was a eugenicist, and in my opinion, a raging totalitarian. And the goal was always, I think, of UNESCO to use education to brainwash children to be subservient, to be acquiescent to this one world eugenics, humanist kind of religious, economic, and political system. And again, they're still working on that, just not quite as transparently as they were back in the 1940s.
Right. Starting there, that's kind of a foundation of it was rotten from the beginning, as most of these things are. Talk about and explain who she was, Alice Bailey, for a minute, because she's a key player. She's been dead for a long time, but her influence has been tremendous inside of the United Nations framework of many of the different aspects of things they're doing. But talk about her just a little bit, just a background, so people understand where their predominant motivations are coming from.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, Curtis. Very few Americans today know anything about Alice Bailey, and yet she was such a pivotal figure. I don't think you can understand the modern world without understanding Alice Bailey. Now, Alice Bailey certainly was not the first. She was, of course, a disciple of Helena Blavatsky, the Russian mystic who wrote very bizarre things like Isis Unveiled, and you know, the Theosophical Society had its roots in that. And to kind of really just cut to the chase and boil down their religion to as simple a concept as possible, they really invert the biblical story. They believe that Lucifer was the good one. Satan, the snake in the garden, was the good one, coming here to liberate us from this horrible, evil, oppressive Jehovah God that was keeping us prisoner in this garden, right, without knowledge and so on. And so Satan came with bearing the light, right, the light bringer, to bring us knowledge of good and evil and of everything else. And so they truly view Lucifer as the good one in this story, the liberator of mankind. And so it's the Bible story flipped upside down. And so Helena Blavatsky and also Alice Bailey were in communication with, they said, for secular people out there, well, no, they weren't, right? This is a materialist world. Maybe she was delusional, whatever. Alice Bailey said she was in communication with these spiritual entities. She described them as ascended masters. The chief of these ascended masters was Jeval Kul, described as the Tibetan. And so Alice Bailey openly said that she was acting as a channel for these spiritual entities that were going to help humanity transcend this kind of backwards, Christian existence that we lived in, this oppressive system based on the Bible, based on Christianity, and move toward this new age, right? As the term new age comes out of here, we're going to move into this new age where we were going to transcend our old, bigotries and all these old things that came with Christianity, and move into this wonderful age where we were going to evolve into something superior. But of course, the big problem was Christians. And if you read her books, these books that these demons were kind of dictating to her, I guess, oftentimes she uses the term the Christ. And so I think for Christians who are not steeped in this, it's maybe a little bit easier to get confused. They're not talking about Jesus Christ. Okay. We can say that very simply. They're talking about the Antichrist, the false Christ. And one of the things she describes in her books as the greatest obstacle to this transformation is what she says is the great heresy of separateness. And that's cute until you read your Bible and realize that we are called to be holy. We are called to be separate. We are called to be apart from this wicked system that exists, right? The Bible teaches that Satan is actually, the Apostle Paul refers to him as the God of this world. In 1 John, it says the whole world is in the hands or the power of the evil one. And so, we as Christians, we're supposed to recognize that, and we're supposed to be apart from that. We're supposed to live different. We're supposed to be separate. And Alice Bailey could not tolerate that. She believed that these Bible-thumping, Bible-believing Christians were standing in the way of this wonderful progress, this illumination. And so she believed, and this was fed to her by her ascended masters, that education was the key to doing this. She had one interesting book called Externalization of the Hierarchy, and it kind of, I think, really describes what we're going through now, this idea that all of the occult secrets of the mystery schools need to be kind of brought out into the public. And so, you look at these Super Bowl halftime shows, and they're running around with horns on their head and doing weird rituals. Like, what in the world is going on? Well, it's the externalization of the hierarchy. They're bringing us all collectively as a society into the occult, into the mystery schools. And so the reason Alice Bailey is so important, because I know a lot of this stuff to normal people sounds like, what kind of kook was that? And it is kooky. It's insane. It's diabolical. It comes from the pit of hell. But this lady was unbelievably influential. And let me just give you a small hint directly related to UNESCO as to how influential she was. UNESCO created something. The man who wrote it was Robert Mueller. He was the Assistant Secretary General of the UN, the number two at the UN. And he wrote the World Core Curriculum. And they also, this needs to be taught in every school on planet Earth. Every child needs to be infused with it. And it's all about evolution. And, it's this kind of worldview that comes from the pit of hell. And in the foreword to the teacher's manual for this World Core Curriculum, there's this remarkable admission penned by Robert Mueller, no relation with the special counsel. I know the name is the same, but totally different guy. And he says that the underlying philosophy upon which it's based is going to be found in the books of Alice Bailey and the Tibetan teacher Jeval Kul. So he's openly telling you in the foreword to the teacher's manual for this World Core Curriculum that it's based on the teachings of Alice Bailey. And so Alice Bailey had, for example, a book called Education in the New Age. And if you really want to understand this stuff, I've got a copy of this book. Anybody can get a copy. There's a lot of insight in there into what's happening. And it boils down to, we're going to use the educational system to induct everybody into the occult, into the New Age. We're going to train them to be good world citizens. She actually says we're going to develop a world brain. And she says we're going to do this by fusing Marxism and neo-scholasticism. And then here's the kicker. We're going to use the methodologies, the methods advocated by John Dewey, who, of course, was the founder of America's progressive public education system and one of the co-founders of the humanist religion. So it all ties in together. It's all from the pit of hell. And this is still taking place to this day. And I think a lot of people think, well, what does that have to do with America? Well, I'll just give you a couple quick fun facts. Bill Gates went over to UNESCO headquarters. This was in 2004, and he signed an agreement with UNESCO. And the agreement said that the Microsoft and UNESCO were going to work together on creating world education standards, world syllabi, world teacher training programs, and world technological systems to make it all work. And then, of course, Bill Gates comes back to America, and this is the part where everybody knows, he starts putting millions of dollars and then billions of dollars. I think he spent $2.3 billion on Common Core. And, of course, for a while, they were bragging that Common Core lines America's educational system up with international standards as well. And I've got the ads where Bill Gates was paying for commercials bragging that Common Core is going to align American education with the international standards that they were working on. So it all comes full circle. Again, Alice Bailey, very little known today, but hugely influential. She actually designed the prayer and meditation room at UN headquarters. All the leaders of the UN and these international institutions, very, very familiar with her. Her influence lives on in this whole constellation of organizations. One of them is the Fetzer Institute. Is based in Michigan. And I had not heard of it until I was visiting the Collaborative for Academic Social and Emotional Learning. This was founded by a whole bunch of these new age psychiatrists and neuroscientists. And their thinking was we need to promote a new way of educating children socially and emotionally. And right on the history page, they said the idea for this came out of the Fetzer Institute. So I go over to the Fetzer Institute, and it takes me all of 30 seconds to find out that this was founded by a New Age occultist and a disciple of Alice Bailey, who had all his key executives come together, and they're chanting these prayers that Alice Bailey developed. So even though you don't know Alice Bailey, if you're an average American, her influence is all around you today.
Yes. And one of the things she indirectly influenced that you talk about in some of your recent articles is the social and emotional learning, which SEL, a lot of people, if you're involved at all with the public schools, you've heard those terms. What's that really set to do? What's the point of that?
Well, if you listen to them and their marketing, and I'm sure they put a lot of money into marketing and focus groups and how do we make this sound as non-threatening and as essential as possible, all it's going to do is teach your child to regulate his or her or their or zer, depending on your pronouns, emotions. It's going to teach them to have healthy relationships. It's going to teach them how to have self-control, which, of course, is the fruit of the spirit, not the fruit of social emotional learning. But you don't have to spend a lot of time reading their publications and going through their documents to realize that it is much more than just teaching kids to regulate their emotions. In fact, that's a very minor component. What this is the most advanced manipulation, emotional manipulation, psychological manipulation of children that has ever been mainstreamed into education, not just in the United States. This is now global. And so what they're doing is they're scientifically manipulating psychologically and even psychiatrically, right? They're openly talking now about using neuroscience to build kinder brains in children. But as you go through their documents, you see very quickly there is a real political agenda here. And to use the left-right spectrum, if you will, it is a radical left-wing political agenda. It's about environmentalism. It's about, critical race theory. And they say this on their websites, right? They were going to use SEL to teach children about racial justice and why it's so important that, we understand systemic racism and how patriarchy is oppressing women. It's anti-family, anti-individual liberty, anti-Bible, anti-truth. And so it's all these wicked ideas being infused into the minds of children using something that sounds rather harmless. It almost sounds beneficial at first glance, but is actually the culmination of 100 years of very dangerous research, some of it coming out of the Soviet Union, Lev Vygotsky, some of it, Pavlov, right? Pavlov's experiments with animals. It's actually a critical component of this. A lot of it is behavioral training, where you kind of try to condition children to exhibit the desired response to a given stimuli. And so that's what you deal with today. You find a lot of young people and you just say a trigger word and it actually shuts down their thinking. And you see this, they kind of start drooling and they're like, well, that's racist. I wasn't even talking about it. What do you mean? How is that right? But they're not actually thinking. It's just a conditioned response that's being elicited from them. So SEL, to summarize, a very, very advanced form of psychological manipulation to indoctrinate children. And then it is also being used. I just did a big article on this, appeared at the New American Magazine last week, about how SEL is being used to infuse this one world spirituality in children. And again, they're open about this. You can go to their websites. You can watch their speeches. I've got one of the leaders of this on camera in a video in public talking about this spiritual entity that supposedly popped up at the table with her and gave her insight into all this stuff. So they're open about this. And they're saying we have to infuse spirituality into the education of our children. The UN says all these kinds of things, and SEL is the marketing slogan for the vehicle that they are using.
Yeah, no, a few things you wrote in that article, which was excellent. The UN Institute sums up its aims by this, quote, changing mindsets, challenging norms, and transforming education for humanity. It's all about transformation. It's all about psychologically manipulating your children and your grandchildren into becoming warriors and activists on their side against you and what you believe and all the principles America was founded on and all the biblical truths. Another thing you talked about that I thought was so interesting, and I don't know how to pronounce his name for sure, is it Dr. Singh?
Yeah, Dr. Singh, Karam Singh, I think it is. Yep.
Yeah, and he was one of the leaders in the UNESCO movement and one of the branches of that. But he said, the final aim for all human beings is the path to enlightenment. Just think about that as compared, like you mentioned your article, compared to what our confessions say about the end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. They're saying, no, it's to enlighten man, which is back to Alice Bailey. It's this radical Luciferian system of flipping everything that's biblical on its head and inventing this new age religion. But that was interesting to me. Its goal, really, I wrote a note as I was reading your article, they hate Christianity. It's to destroy every facet, every little branch of it that has ever blessed mankind. They're trying to uproot it. They don't look at our children as individuals made in the image of God. They are simply tools to manipulate, to get more power, more control. But continuing on with the United Nations, Alex, like I said at the beginning, the World Economic Forum has kind of taken the lead as far as in the public eye, more of our side's talking about them than the United Nations now. But how does the United Nations intricately fit into the Great Reset? And what's their key roles and what they're doing to push that agenda and be part of that change that's taking place?
Yeah, so the Great Reset and the UN's agenda are basically one and the same. It's just different marketing slogans. And you don't have to dig very far to see this. I'll give you some clear examples. So the UN passed Agenda 2030. This was in 2015. Every national government on the planet signed up. Barack Obama signed on behalf of the United States. He didn't submit it to the Senate, but they acted like it's an executive agreement. We don't need to do that, right? This is an agreement that every nation or every government of every nation has agreed to. Pope Francis was there to give it a big hearty endorsement. The genocidal mass murdering Marxist dictator of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, who's now passed away. He was gushing about how wonderful this was going to be. It was going to build a brave new world, he said. I don't know if you got the reference or not. The Communist Chinese came out and they said, oh, we're so proud of this. We played a crucial role in developing Agenda 2030. It's a set of 17 sustainable development goals. The head of the UN General Assembly, Peter Thompson of Fiji, at the time, he called it the master plan for humanity, which, you know, a little bit of a God complex there. Pretty sure God gets to make master plans for humanity, not the United Nations. But you had the Secretary General of the UN at that time, Ban Ki-moon, said this was the global declaration of interdependence. I mean, just a direct attack on our Declaration of Independence, which says that that's a self-evident truth that God created us, that he gave us rights, that government exists to protect these rights. Direct attack on these foundational principles of our country. And when you read Agenda 2030, it is essentially the Great Reset program, right? You go to, for example, goal number 10. Goal 10 talks about not just national socialism, right? It talks about the alleged need to redistribute wealth, share the wealth. These are just nice ways of saying we need to steal stuff from everybody, right? You take away the fancy language and it boils down to a flagrant call to violate one of the key 10 commandments. I mean, all of them are key, but thou shalt not steal. And I guess the assumption is God must not have known that resources wouldn't be properly distributed. And so now the UN has got to come in and save us from that. And so they say we're going to redistribute wealth, not just within nations, but among nations. So we're going to have global wealth redistribution. In other words, global thievery. And, you know, they want you to think that this is like we're going to take money from the Rockefellers and Bill Gates and George Soros, and we're going to hand it to starving, you know, children in some third world country. Baloney, right? They're going to loot the middle class and the poor in America to redistribute to their hidden bank accounts and to the kleptocrats who agree to participate from the third world. That's really what's going on here. They go on to talk about we need abortions for everybody. We need vaccines for everybody. It's a global comprehensive plan that touches every single element of your life. Goal number four deals with the brainwashing of your children. They say every child, every learner on this planet needs to be so indoctrinated, they won't just passively submit to this Agenda 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. The word they use is they'll actually promote it. So they'll promote world citizenship. They'll promote sustainable development, which, you know, sustainable development is kind of the ideological smokescreen, the ideological cover for this agenda. We're going to somehow be more sustainable by doing exactly the opposite of what God commands us, right? And starting with the very first command he ever gave us, be fruitful and multiply. They'll tell you every which way. There's too many people on the planet. Actually, we were talking about that UN Education Institute earlier. Half the people that run it are known population control nuts. So you mentioned Dr. Kadam Singh. Before he became the chairman of the board of this UNESCO Institute, he was actually the minister of family planning in India under the regime of Indira Gandhi, who, of course, forcibly rounded up millions of people, brutally sterilized them, sterilized like 15 times more people than Adolf Hitler's regime did. So that's who they're putting in charge of this. So anyways, I'm getting off track here, but you got these 15 sustainable development goals. They cover every area of your life. And then in 2019, the World Economic Forum comes in and they sign a strategic partnership with the UN to to bring the business community into the implementation of Agenda 2030 Sustainable Development. And Peter Drucker, and I talk about this in this cover story that I did recently when I got back from Egypt at the climate summit. Peter Drucker, whose cover story was a management guru, much more significant than a management guru, but he argued that to bring about these huge transformations of the planet that they envision, you need something that he described as a three-legged stool. So you need the governments, the public sector. That's where the UN comes in. They bring all the national governments on board. And if they won't participate, the U.S. government, the U.S. taxpayer will be forced to bribe them to participate. If they still won't participate, they might get the Gaddafi treatment. They might get the Assad treatment. They might get the Saddam Hussein treatment, you know, whatever it takes to make sure every nation, every government in the world is participating. The second leg of the stool is the private sector. That's where the World Economic Forum comes in. They're bringing, the Fortune 500, actually the Fortune 1000 to the table to get them to implement this. And they're very, very effective at this. And then the third leg of the stool is the religious organizations. And this is critical, right? The UN funds an organization. It's basically a UN front group. It's called Religions for Peace. It's funded by a lot of the UN agencies. Right now, it happens to be led by a former senior executive at the UN Population Fund, the organization of the UN dedicated to reducing the population of people on the planet. They've been caught working with the communist Chinese to forcibly abort children in communist China. So you've got this Religions for Peace organization, and they actually came together in 2019 in Germany, leaders of the Vatican, leaders of supposedly evangelical, Christian denominations, leaders of Orthodox denominations, Eastern Orthodox denominations, Greek, Russian, et cetera. Then you had Hindus, all sorts of pagans, right? A whole bunch of, spirit worshipers from the Amazon rainforest and stuff. You had Shintos and Buddhists. And I think they said that the leaders of these religions of the world represented something like 7 out of 8 billion people on the planet. And they come up with an international declaration. And in the declaration, they say, we all commit our religious organizations and movements to organize human development on the model of Agenda 2030. So the Great Reset is total restructuring of society. And they kind of describe it, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. America's going to get knocked down. You can't eat meat, basically global technocracy. So all this merges into one. And now the religious leaders of the world are on board. The businesses of the world are on board. The governments of the world are on board. And it's people like you and me, Curtis, standing and saying, nope, sorry, we're not participating.
That's right. No. And so that's key to understand, because again, the United Nations isn't talked about as much as it used to be. And the World Economic Forum is kind of up there more in the forefront. But the climate change agenda, Agenda 2030 and Agenda 21, that is the whole foundation of the world government, of how they're going to transform everything for the Great Reset. That's why they're closing down the farms. That's why they're, you know, outlawing fossil fuels and stopping our ability to use them and to have cheap energy that helps us be prosperous and helps us thrive. And so it's important to know about that. Talk just for a minute then about fitting into that, the ESG with the digital currencies and the digital ID, just how that is all fitting together then to make anyone that says, I don't want to be involved in that, to make them submit whether they like it or not.
Yeah, and you see this very clearly in China. Everybody gets a social credit score, and that is basically a control mechanism that almost forces people to do what the regime wants them to do without even having to resort to brute force. And that's not to say they won't resort to brute force. They absolutely will. They'll put you in a re-education camp. If that doesn't work, they'll strap you on a table and chop your organs out of you and sell them to the highest bidder or give them to a senior member of the Communist Party. So they will use barbarism if they have to. But what they're doing with these scores, and these are coming to America now, ESG is just the first step of it, is trying to force all the businesses, force all the capital, and force ultimately all the individuals to participate in this, to play along with it, whether they want to or not. So ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. And really it is kind of the culmination of fascism, right? Benito Mussolini, very appropriately, the ultimate fascist, defined fascism as the merger of state and corporate power. Well, that's what ESG really is. These are nebulous goals established by the UN and by governments and all the rest of it, and they're being forced onto businesses and companies under the guise of ESG. And so whereas in a free market system, a company exists to make profit for its shareholders. And how do you make profit for your shareholders? Well, you serve customers. What do customers want? How do we take resources and turn them into something more valuable that then will satisfy the needs and wants of customers? And of course, this is the system that I think God has prescribed for us in the Bible. Thou shalt not steal. You know, the Apostle Paul said, if you don't work, you don't eat, right? It's just basic free market economics. You need just weights and measures so that people aren't scamming each other. It takes this and flips it on its head and says, no. The purpose of companies is not to make money for shareholders and serve customers. The purpose of companies is to do what the government says, to worry about environmental stuff and climate change stuff and diversity stuff, and to put homosexual people on advertisements. You know, that'll give them a better social score. And so they're weaponizing the private sector now into this agenda. And ultimately, the goal will be to bring every single person on the planet under that control matrix. And so if you look at China, I think that's China is almost like the model that they want to use. And we talked about this in a previous episode, Curtis. That's what they want for every single person. And so if you have friends who are not on board, that'll knock your social credit score down. So that'll tend to isolate people who resist this. If you ask tough questions on social media, that will lower your social credit score. If you, if you don't do whatever they say, if you eat too much steak, if you, drive your car too much, whatever it is, that'll lower your score. And then that will come with consequences. So in China, when your score gets low enough, you can't travel anymore. You can't have a job anymore. Your children can't go to a proper school anymore. But if you're really good, well, hey, you can get on an airplane. You can go wherever you want in the world. You can get promoted up into the regime's institutions. So it's a very dangerous control mechanism. Then you add to that the digital currency and the digital ID, other crucial mechanisms for bringing people under control. And you realize it's the most Orwellian total control grid ever imagined by man. Ultimately, they want to get rid of cash so that you cannot spend money or take in money. You cannot buy or sell, but for the beneficence of your rulers, the government and the corporations. They also want to force you to have a digital ID. They're already microchipping people. Thousands of lemmings in Sweden went and got microchips to have their vaccine passport on it. Now they can pay when they get on the train. They don't have to have a train ticket. You just get scanned. And so ultimately, that's where they want to go with this. How far God will allow them to go down this road to hell, really, we'll have to see. But man, we're racing down it right now. That's for sure.
Yes. And we've talked about that on here before, but the digital currency, which is right at the doorstep, and the digital ID, which is right there as well. Even Tucker Carlson this week had Catherine Austin Fitz on there talking about how once you get that, and if you can do away with the cash, you're at a level of totalitarianism that makes 1984 look like a joke. You make the Soviet Union look like a joke because you can shut anyone down. You can restrict their movement because none of their cards will work outside of their circle where they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to be doing, in any opposition to them, any comment. Yeah. Any, like, I don't think I agree with that. You don't? Okay. Or your carbon score, where they'll start saying, no, you can't eat this, you can't do this. So it's something to be aware of, but we need to be active in going, okay, we need alternative systems where we are networking amongst ourselves and in our local communities to be self-sufficient with the necessities of life right where we are. So we can say no to this stuff and stand up against it. And many millions are waking up to it, which is wonderful. And so that's a positive thing. So I know this is one of your big passions, but as we see this stuff going on and we see it's gone to a whole different level, it's not about dumbing them down. That's the key that you have to understand. If it was just dumbing them down where they didn't get a good education, you can revive from that, because then you can start studying and you learn. But when you've been twisted, when it's indoctrination, when it's brainwashing, it's hard to ever come back to reality because you have been manipulated. But I know this is huge to you and it's huge to me. How important is it now, Alex, that we get the children out of this system completely, never to return?
I think it is potentially the most important thing for an average person to do. And you know, I'll get some responses from Christians. Well, what about the Great Commission? And I say, this is the Great Commission, right? You want to make disciples of all nations. You want to baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. You want to teach them to obey. And yet you're going to feed your children to the beast? Really? I mean, how do you do a Great Commission and make disciples of other nations while you're letting the enemy disciple your own children? It's frustrating. It flabbergasts me. And I try to be as kind and gentle as I can be in saying this, but I just, sometimes I want to shake people and say, look, you have to do this. Your children are in incredible danger right now. And there's so many erroneous ideas out there. Like, well, I'll just talk to them when they get home from school and, you know, check what they learned and I'll just counteract it with the truth. You know, even the old humanist buddies of John Dewey, when they came up with the Humanist Manifesto, one of these guys, C.F. Potter, he wrote a book about how humanism, and he was one of the signers of the Humanist Manifesto with John Dewey. He wrote a book about laughing, right? What is your Sunday school going to do teaching kids 1 hour, some of the kids, 1 hour a week when we've got them for 5 days a week? And of course, the answer is absolutely nothing. If you look at just the number of hours that of actual, you know, time spent together, a parent and a child, versus the amount of time that the government will have your children if you send them through the public schools, they'll have them 3 to 4 times more than you. And that's if you're a really active, highly involved parent. So, you know, I think we need to go back to God's word on this. God's word never told you to hand your children over to Caesar. And even if we had a godly Caesar, that would be true, right? Even if we had a legitimate government that didn't believe in taking our tax money and killing babies, that didn't lie to us to start a bunch of wars, that didn't try to redefine marriage. So even if we had a decent government, it's still not the government's job to educate children. In every Bible verse that you find about education, about discipling, training of children, it's always, always, always the responsibility of parents. And that's not to say that parents can't delegate some of those tasks. You know, if you want to work with people in your church or send them to a Christian school, you know, there are other options, I think, that are acceptable, biblically speaking. But one thing that is not acceptable is sending them to a godless pagan system that you now know is working to dumb them down, indoctrinate them with anti-Christian, anti-Bible, anti-Christ ideas. And I think Jesus gave us the clearest litmus test. This really should be all you need to know about this. He's quoted in Matthew chapter 12 and then again in Luke. Okay, this is Jesus, our Savior, our King, our Lord, saying, whoever is not with me, or he who is not with me, depending on your translation, is against me. And so those are the options. And, you know, I challenge anybody to argue that the public schools today are with Christ. And nobody would do it because it's preposterous. And so I think for parents, you know, for Christian parents, there is probably nothing more important than fulfilling your biblical obligation, fulfilling the responsibility that God has placed on your shoulder, and taking your children out of the system and making sure they get a God-centered, godly education. And I'll quote two more verses that I love from the scriptures, because God doesn't give us the minutiae about how to do it. As you know, you need to do 37 credit hours of science and 12 of English to have it. But he does tell us the basics. Proverbs 1:7, Proverbs 9:10, God tells us the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And they're not going to get any fear of the Lord in a public school. You know that. I know that. So they're not going to get any wisdom. They're not going to get any knowledge. It's your job, mom and dad. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 11. You'll see you are to be teaching your children when you wake up, when you're walking, when you're eating, when you're laying down to go to bed, all the time. Caesar's job is to punish evil, not to raise your kids for you.
That's right. And we've seen the fruit of it the last 40, 50 years, even before it's gotten as bad as it is now. And we saw we're losing 80 to 90% of our children through right. The brainwashing that's taken place. But now it's entering a whole new world where it's wanting to mutilate our own children. It's confuse them where they don't even know if they're a boy or a girl. I mean, it's getting pretty obvious where God's allowing it to go to that level. And I think part of that is to wake the troops and realize I can't have my children in there. But I'm telling you, I know Alex homeschools his children, and so do I. It's a big task, and it takes a lot of time. But that time spent with your own children in teaching and educating them and discussing things with them is what builds and knits your hearts together, builds a relationship that then has influence. And so when you say, son, I don't think you should do that, he's listening because you've spent so much time with him. He knows that you love him, and he knows the truth, and you know that he knows the truth because you've taught him. So it's a special part of life. I'm so thankful someone influenced us when our kids were little to do it. And it's been the best thing we've ever done. I'm so grateful for that opportunity, but I know that's a big thing of yours, Alex, and it is of mine too. I always encourage people in that. And it's not as hard as you think it is, because you're not trying to duplicate what's being done in those schools. It's a totally different way of learning. We covered a lot of things, Alex, that's important just to see the bigger picture, understand how it fits together. What are some things besides, we already talked about like homeschooling, which is vital, but what are some other possible things people can do individually, right where they are, to kind of have some pushback against some of the different things that we talked about?
Yeah, I would say the first thing is to be in prayer and be reading the Bible, because these are very confusing times, and that's deliberate. They want you confused. They want you fearful. And so step one, don't be ignorant. And to not be ignorant, you have to read your Bible. You have to be in prayer. Right? God is the source of all truth. And if you're not in the Word, it's much easier to manipulate you on every issue, right? You need that reference point, that anchor in truth, or you're going to be deceived. You're going to be scared. And of course, we know that fear is a tool that the enemy uses. So we need to be knowledgeable, and we need to be fearless, right? You fear the Lord, and that's it. Do not let them scare you with propaganda about COVID or anything else, right? We should have seen that 3 years ago when they started saying, oh, you're going to die if you don't. Whenever somebody starts talking like that, you need to be really, really concerned, because again, fear is not something that comes from the Lord. The Lord didn't send us a spirit of fear. So another really good thing, you touched on some of it. It's very good, I think, if people can start forming networks and start forming systems that are not dependent on the broader system. So I've been encouraging people, go to your local farmer's market, develop relationships with local farmers. At some point, they may be cut off, right? You don't want to vaccinate your cows with mRNA, whatever stuff. Well, then you can't sell to the grocery store chain anymore. You can't sell to this national supplier that stocks Walmart. Okay, that's all right. I got 10 neighbors ready to buy half a cow. So, do what you want. Right? Work with your local officials and your state officials. During COVID, this really became so clear to me. I am incredibly blessed to live in a little corner of a free state. And even during the height of the madness, people in California, Illinois, New York, even some conservatives, they're locked in their basement, they have 8 masks on. You can't go out to a restaurant without a vaccine passport. My life was totally normal. It didn't change one iota, other than having the fascist airlines enforcing these mask mandates. I didn't do anything different whatsoever. I continued meeting with my brothers and sisters. We continued doing church. We continued doing homeschool co-op. All of it, right? And that was thanks to the fact that we had well-grounded, liberty-minded individuals at the city, at the county, and at the state level, whereas you know, even in parts of my state, you had totalitarians on county commissions or in city governments that were imposing all this stuff. So right now, while we still have the freedoms that we have, go develop relationships with your city commissioners, with your county commissioners, with your sheriffs. Make sure that they're on the same page. And if they're not, there's elections coming up in a couple of years. Take that opportunity to remove them. Get somebody better put into that spot. What else can people do? You know, stop using the big companies to the largest extent possible. You know, starve the beast. I don't use Google now for anything. There are really good alternatives out there. I got canceled by PayPal, but I had already switched to another alternative. There are great ones. So find alternatives as much as you can. And I think it's really important to be connected with a network of believers and, you know, make sure you're in a Bible study or a small group and, you know, homeschool co-op. All of these kind of networks will be absolutely critical, just like they were during COVID, to getting out the other side of this unscathed. But most importantly, be in prayer and be in the word, because I think we're going to be headed into some real turbulence and you don't want to get caught off guard.
That's right. No. I appreciate that. Alex, what's the best way? I think it's libertysentinel.org. What best way for people to get in touch with you or to get your resources to support you in what you're doing? And Alex is a friend of mine, and you all that are Agenda Weekly listeners know that we've had him on here several times, but he is spending his time away from his family a lot of the time, speaking at events all over the country to wake people up. And so, and nobody's paying his bills to do that. He's doing that because he cares about our country. He cares about his own children and he realizes what's happening. So I just encourage you all, what's some things that maybe you have to offer, Alex, that would be a blessing if they partook in that or got your books and things like that?
Oh, well, I appreciate that so much, Curtis. Thank you. If people go to my website, libertysentinel.org, I have a little shop button there. And if people are interested in, you know, some of the books I've written, some of the DVDs, I've got, you know, stuff like this, I'll be happy to mail them to you. They'll come signed if you get them directly from me. And yeah, people can sign up for the newsletter there. I also encourage people to go to thenewamerican.com. If you're not a subscriber, you should be. You can get the free daily headlines. Even if you don't subscribe to the print magazine, you can get the headlines in your inbox every day. I'm a volunteer leader of a ministry called Public School Exit. You can find us at publicschoolexit.com. We exist to serve parents, families, and churches and pastors trying to get children out of the school system. And again, I appreciate it so much, Curtis. I also have a daily show. I've been very blessed to have you on before. It airs every day, 4:30 to 5 Eastern time. It goes live on Lindell TV, and then it gets picked up by some of the other networks, Brighteon and the Taken Network, Worldview Weekend, and some of the other Christian ones. And so people can watch that if they're interested. And again, I thank you so much for having me on the program, Curtis, and thank you for everything that you do. It's really a blessing to not just to me, but to the whole country. I really, really appreciate all your work. So thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's an honor.
I hope you enjoyed that. I know we covered a lot of different things. It's hard to dig in really deep when you're trying to give a broad 30,000 foot view of something. But another article we'll have below that we didn't have time to get to is the CCP proves climate fight not really about climate. And we'll have this article below. But some of the key points in it are things that you know but are so important to the cause. You know, the fact that all the people at the top that are pushing this agenda, they don't live by that. They could care less how big their carbon footprint is and all that. That exposes the lies. The science of climate and environment prove it's all a lie. CO2 levels are extremely low right now. They're at a dangerous level. They're so low. And they're saying, no, to be green, you got to cut the CO2. So, but anyway, that article has a lot of other details that might be helpful for some of you to share with others that are kind of thinking, well, we got to save the planet. We don't need to save the planet. The planet's doing great in all the free countries of the world, like Europe and America. The places where the environment really is being destroyed is the communist countries, the totalitarian countries. Those are the ones that could care less about the environment. And they hope we jump on board with all the climate change nonsense, because then it's going to just weaken us and it's going to impoverish us. And they know that. That's why China's like, yeah, you guys get on that. We'll start doing that in 20, 30, or 40 while they're building capacity. Just what they're going to put online in the next couple of years is more than all of America's put together. That's how crazy this thing is. And so they're prospering with cheap energy, and we are destroying ourselves. Anyway, we appreciate you being there. Those, again, to remind you, if you'd like to go to the website agendaweekly.com and upgrade your plan, please do that. That would be a blessing. But our verse for this week is Philippians 4:8. It's one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Listen carefully. Make sure you memorize this one. It's very encouraging. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of a good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. In the midst of what's going on, we still have so much to be thankful for. Don't forget that. And until next week, God bless you.